What's up, bros? This is Cheyenne from Andover, and you're listening to Something Lit with DJ Hunter.
Welcome to episode number 11 of Something Lit with me, DJ Hunter. The 11th episode, I was already shocked when we hit the 10th one. So I still just like to look back and see exactly how far we've come, and it's just so awesome. And we have an awesome episode today. I have two very amazing people with me today. First and foremost, if you have been following me closely on Facebook, you would see that I have been following very closely with the adventures of bike tourist Max Turcotte of the Pedal the Earth blog, and he is here with us today. What's up, bro?
Not much. How's it going?
Very awesome. Just excited to be giving you an opportunity to talk about your travels here on the podcast. Absolutely love it. And returning is Ashley B. What's up, Ash?
Hey guys, what's going on?
Not too much right now. So just very happy to be here with you guys. This is absolutely amazing. I'm very excited for this. Awesome.
This should be pretty cool, yeah.
Oh yes. So I know about Max through his dad, who is a DJ in my local area on radio, and he was posting about Max's adventures on Facebook, and I watched an interview that the local TV station did just before he set out. And basically what's going on right now is with a bike and lots of determination, Max is touring the world on his bike, and this is absolutely awesome. And people get to follow along with it because he is blogging about the entire thing, and it is just is very awesome. So, Max, what made you want to do this?
Well, I started backpacking about 2 years ago. I went to the UK with my mom looking for universities to go to, and I kind of, when I got back, I didn't really want to go to university anymore. I just like the travel aspect of it. So I got into backpacking, and I visited 13 countries in the next couple months in Europe and Africa and Asia. And during those, I read a book about bike touring. It was written by Alistair Humphreys, and he cycled around the world for 4 years. He visited 5 continents. And that got me into the idea of it, but I still wasn't sure that I'd want to do something that big. So I started that small. I cycled Land's End to John O'Groats in the UK, which was about 1,100 miles.
Wow.
And I read a few more books about cycling the world. And when I got back, when I finished Land's End to John O'Groats and I reached that final signpost in northern Scotland, I just knew that I wanted to cycle around the world. So when I got back from that trip, I started planning this, and here I am now.
That is awesome. So where has it taken you so far? I know you're coming at us from the Netherlands right now, but where have you been so far on this journey?
So I left my home in Lewiston exactly a month ago, July 4th. And I cycled from Lewiston, Maine through to Canada, through New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, and then I flew from Nova Scotia to England. And I spent 2 weeks in England with my friends and family. I have cousins over there that I spent time with, and I got my bike sorted with a different kit. Lighter. I got rid of some stuff that I didn't need, and I got some vaccinations. And I just left again last week, and I cycled down to Portsmouth, England, to ferry to France, and now I'm in the Netherlands from there.
Staying at a bed and breakfast as we speak.
Yeah, it's nice, and it's very budget.
So where's your favorite place you've been to so far, and where's your least favorite place you've been to so far, and why?
Canada was pretty fun to cycle through. I've been to too many countries so far, but I think England would be my least favorite. Not that it's bad, but I've already done the length of Britain, and I was eager to get out of there and just start mainland Europe. So yeah, Canada would be my favorite. It has had some good scenery, and then England would be far the least favorite.
And your most, what did you say that already, or?
Oh, Canada.
Okay, all right, cool.
Yeah.
So I.
And I. What's that?
I take it you've made a lot of friends so far too. It's just the network of people that you're able to build when you do this must be really cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. I've met a lot of kind people. I've been hosted by about 4 people just out of the blue that either offered to have me camp in their backyard, or they invited me into their house to have me stay in like a bed. So I'm very grateful to those people, and to my friends, family in England who hosted me for 2 weeks. That was amazing.
Even with the people that have hosted you so far, was that because of the... Was it mainly because of the media attention you've been getting because of this? Because I know you've done several interviews. You went on air with your dad on his morning show, and you were on the news and several other things as well. Was it because of that, or did they just see you biking and they were just being amazing people?
So actually, none of these, except for my friends in England, none of these people had heard of me before. And I was just like the first night on this tour, I left from my home in Lewiston and cycled to Palermo, Maine, and it was about 6 o'clock at night, and I was looking for a place to camp, but I just couldn't find one. And then just this guy behind me just asked me, are you looking for a place to camp? And then he invited me in. I set up my tent, he invited me in for 4th of July burgers, and we became pretty good friends. He was actually into bike touring as well, so we got talking about that. It was very nice.
Do you guys still talk?
We haven't talked directly, but he comments on my blogs and I respond to him on there. So yeah, it's still nice to keep in contact that way.
Well, that'd be awesome. It'd be especially cool if even, cause even so after the tour too, if you still like kept in contact with all of them, and is that what you're planning to do? Like what's the plans post tour?
Well, I don't have a plan that far ahead. I know I want to write a book about this when I get back, but
oh, nice.
That's about it. But yeah, I don't see myself keeping in contact with every single one of the people that I've been hosted by, because by the time I'm finished, it might be quite a number of them.
Yeah.
But I hope to keep in contact with at least some of them, because it would be nice.
Do you know how long, like, you're gonna do this tour for, or are you just kind of going with the flow?
So it's looking like it's gonna be at least 2 years.
Okay.
From here, I'm gonna go up to Norway, cross over in Sweden, cross over to Finland, then go down all the way to Turkey. When I reach Turkey, I'm going to decide if I want to go through Africa or Asia. I haven't really decided that yet. There's pros and cons to each continent. But from the end, when I reach the end of one of those continents, I'm going to fly to Australia and work there for at least 6 months to make up some more money to go over to either South America or back to North America.
Can you expand on something you just said? There's pros and cons to going to each continent for Africa and Asia?
Yeah. So starting with Africa, there's been a recent revolution in Sudan, which would cause me to have to fly over Sudan. So I would probably get to Egypt and then fly from Egypt to Uganda or Kenya, which that cuts out nearly half of the country, half of the continent for cycling, which is sad, but I would still want to see the rest of Africa. So the rest of Africa would entail cycling through national parks where wild animals roam, like elephants, lions, and rhinoceros, giraffes, you know. So there's certainly some danger to that, but I think it would be exciting if I stay safe and have common sense.
Yeah, most definitely. And then
for Asia, there'd be the Pamir Mountains, which are this mountain range in Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan, which go up to 15,000 feet. And I'd be cycling through those at least for a month, and the altitude would cause me to have less oxygen than I would here, about 50% less oxygen. So I'm imagining it would be very tough to cycle, but also there's great views. So, but then after that would be Russia, Mongolia, and China, which are just very, especially Russia and Mongolia, they're very open. Open areas of cycling where there's not much to see and not many people, so I'd have to really keep my mind in those places and keep sane, really. There's the pros and cons I'm thinking.
Speaking of just even, like you said, keeping sane and stuff, like how's that been? Because at some points don't you miss it back here sometimes? Like,
Oh yeah. I just have to tell myself that I've chosen to do this, and no matter how hard it gets, I've chosen to do this. So, and it's my trip. Mm-hmm. I don't want to feel like I'm beholden to anyone to keep a certain route or go to certain places or even like have a length of time. Like, I've told people a rough idea of how long I'm going to be gone, but in reality, I just don't know. Because it's an open-ended cycling trip, and I want to eventually make it around the world, but I don't know how long it's going to take. But yeah, there's certainly moments where I miss home, but I can always talk to my mom and dad more frequently in Europe, because there's a lot of Wi-Fi over here. But when I get into more rural places, it might be harder. So. Yeah, I keep busy with podcasts and music I listen to on the road, and those keep me sane most of the time. And if not, I talk to people along the road. There's usually a lot of, especially cyclists, that want to talk and keep in touch.
Well, you're definitely going to have a story to tell for sure.
Yeah.
That's what I told him.
Yeah.
That was like the first thing I ever said to him, because like I commented on his dad's post when he shared the interview, and I'm like, oh man, your kids and grandkids are just gonna wanna love hearing about all this. And he replied to me, he's like, definitely, I'm gonna have a lot of stories to tell.
Yeah.
Pretty cool though.
For certain. Yeah.
Is it common where like people who do cycle all the time, and you see all the bikers and stuff, is it common for them to stop and talk to other cyclists as well? Is there some kind of code?
There's kind of two different cyclists, kind of, well, there's probably more, but two different that I've seen. There's the road cyclists that are clad in like Lycra, and they're just in it for the speed and the fun of actually the sport of cycling. And then there's the cyclotourists. Well, I suppose there's three. So there'd be the cyclotourists next, where they're just heavily laden with bags and such. And when I see someone like that on the road, there's just an unwritten rule to stop and talk, because it looks like you've been places when you have a lot of that like dirty bike and a lot of bags on your bike. So I've met a few cyclotourists on my way so far, and I've talked to them. It's interesting to see what routes other people take and how they've found the road so far. And for the third type of cyclist would be just the normal commute to work kind of cyclist that we don't really talk as well. It's mainly just the people that have a lot of bags on their bike and they look like cyclotourists. We usually stop and talk.
And that's a lot of I'm sure second to people who want to host you, a lot of the people that you do meet and get to talk to are the cycle tourists.
All that. Right, because we have the most in common. Like, when I was backpacking, it'd be the backpackers that I'd want to talk to, and I never actually saw cycle tourists, but now that I'm traveling by bicycle, it's kind of a little group or community of that we have as cycle tourists that we can share ideas and our experiences so far.
Did you ever imagine yourself doing something like this when you were younger?
Oh, no. I mean, I was interested in history and geography and wanting to travel, but I never actually thought I was going to do it. So actually being on this trip is a real treat. It would probably be very surprising to my younger self if I told him.
Yeah, so if you could just go back in time and be like, oh, hey, by the way, in the future, you're going to do this.
Yeah, I'd probably think I was crazy.
What is this?
I think I still am. But...
No.
Some of the best things in life, though, come from the craziest moments and the things that we don't think we're ever going to do.
Amen.
Oh, exactly. But you don't... I wouldn't be living my life if I was just sitting at home doing the things I normally do. That's kind of not what I want to set out for myself at this point. I know plenty of people find joy in staying at home and just living what some would call a normal life. But ever since I've been introduced to the concept of traveling, I just can't get out of it. And it might take a long time for me to settle down, I think.
Yeah.
What was the plan for you before you started doing this? What was it gonna be?
So when I graduated high school 2 years ago now, I wanted to go to university in England, or Scotland actually, for history. I wanted to be a history teacher. I didn't plan too much on it. When I graduated, I wasn't enrolled in anything, but that's why my mom and I went there to start it out and see how I liked it there before I actually enrolled. And when I got back, I didn't actually want to, so I just started traveling. Until I get sick of it, really.
Pretty much.
Yeah, and then write a book about it.
Well, you've already kind of gotten a head start on that with your blog, honestly, because it flows together so well.
The blog will definitely help. I can take bits and pieces from that and piece it together in the book, but it also might take some time to do all that. But at least I have it all written down, so I don't have to remember it all.
Oh
yeah.
Oh, definitely. It's like you're almost like the notes you can refer back to. You just go to your website, look down at all the different blogs. This happened.
Right. Yeah. If I try to remember something, I can look back at my blog and probably have a detailed account of it.
And is that what you do when you're blogging? Like, when you are writing the blogs, do you have little spark notes that you refer back to, like, oh, this happened, then you just and something you definitely want to blog about? Or because you seem to have, you go into detail even with the dialogue and what they said to you and all that. It's awesome.
Yeah, so my routine really is at the end of the day, I go on my phone in the notes and I write down like the events, the main events that happened. And if it's like something big, I'll go into detail about it.
But diary,
just like minor, I'll just put a little thing about it. But then after that, those little bullet points that I put down in my phone, I can refer back to those when I write my blog, and those will jot my memory on bigger events that happened.
You're into blogging, but have you also considered vlogging?
Yeah, I did some of that when I was backpacking. It's just a lot of work. I know some people can handle it. Like there are a lot of cycle tourists that are vlogging and putting up videos on YouTube regularly, but I think I'd have to give up one or the other. Like doing the blog is enough work after cycling, say, 50 miles a day, almost every day. At the end of the day, all I want to do is just rest, but I try to get the blog in. So I think adding the video aspect to the cycling would make it a lot more rough on my mind and my body.
Well, if you do make regular appearances here on Something Lit with DJ Hunter, well, at least you, all you gotta do is speak and I'll push all the buttons.
Right, yeah.
That's how we usually...
That's how you do it.
Yep. I have buttons and I am not afraid to use them. And speaking of buttons and just operating things, your bike is really cool. I guess you built it from scratch? Like, tell us a little bit about your bike.
Yeah, so when I came back from cycling Britain, the bike I used for that trip was more like a road bike, and it had different kind of brakes, and it was more meant for just like tarmac roads. And then I was more I looked at it, and the more I wanted to do the world trip, I'm like, this isn't really going to work out for the terrain I want to be cycling on. So I started looking at different bikes, but I couldn't find one in my size because I'm quite tall. I'm 6'4", and all the bikes that were for my size were either sold out or they didn't sell them in the United States. So I elected to build my own. I ordered the frame from Germany. It's a Surly Troll frame, and I got that, and I ordered the wheels and all the other bits, and I did my best to build it up myself. The only part I had a hard time on was the cabling, like the brakes and the gears. I couldn't get those right. It was not a job for a novice cycle mechanic. So I brought my bike over to my local bike shop, and they sorted that out for me. All in all, I'm pretty satisfied with how it came out. It's quite a good bike.
Yeah, your bike looks pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's nice.
Oh, there's pictures of it and stuff too?
Yep.
Nice. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And that's another thing too, even when you come back, I could see you being, well, yeah, so definitely writing the book like we discussed, but even working on bikes, because you've had like all this experience and stuff, and you've been maintaining your bike along the way, and because you've had to make repairs and stuff as well.
Yeah, it's a possibility. I mean, I don't know how good I will be at fixing bikes by then, like if I know everything about them, but I can certainly see that as an option in the future. Maybe doing like a part-time job and fixing bikes or not.
Did you ever bike for fun when you were a kid? Just like you meet up with your buddies and just you're all, hey, why don't we take our bikes out and it'll be awesome and all that?
Yeah, so when I was a kid, I cycled quite a lot. Like back and forth with my sister to my grandparents, and I cycled with my friends in elementary school. But from when I was like 12 onwards until now, I didn't ride a bike at all. So when I got back into it after reading those books about cycle touring, I really had to not learn to ride a bike again, but get back into it and get the fitness again, because it was beginning to be foreign to me. Okay. After not riding for so long.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah. Especially since it had been a bit, and then you're just like, okay, I gotta make sure I got this for when I set out there.
And yeah, it's kind of a big trip.
Most definitely. Is there a way to make the two-wheel bikes less tippy? It will be easier to balance on them?
Not really. You just kind of have to get used to the unsteadiness of it, because it's when it's loaded down with all that gear, because it weighs about 110 pounds, my bike.
Oh, yeah.
You just kind of have to... You can't treat it like a unladen bike that weighs like 20 pounds, and you can just ride it with no hands, really. I always have to keep my hands on it, because if not, then the handlebars will shake and it might go up and go somewhere. So yeah, it's kind of just a learning curve to get used to all that weight on it.
Even that, I didn't even think of that, because you have everything that you use and everything that you need, yeah, it would make it a little more weighted, so it probably does balance a bit easier.
Yeah, it's just when you like taking corners and turning, it's just you have to be a bit more careful with that, because if you go too much to one side, you fall over.
Yeah,
I haven't fallen over yet.
Okay, that's good. That's really good, because I used to do that when I was. I had the same thing going for me. I would me and my brother and my sisters, we'd, back when we lived in our old house, we'd just take the bikes out back, and I was, well, granted, I was between about 4 and 6 when this happened, so I'd use the four-wheel bike, but when I would do, when I would try to use my brother's two-wheeler, all heck would break loose, because I would I probably had to wear, elbow pads.
So it would crash everywhere.
Yeah.
Oh, but when I was using the, I had a two-seater bike with my dad, and I balanced well on that thing.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, for sure. Do you see that often? Like, people...
Tandem biking?
Yeah, do you see that? Do you ever pass tandem cyclists at all?
I passed one today, but since before today, I haven't seen one, actually. It's probably because I'm in the Netherlands, and it's known for cycling.
Oh, really?
I have lots of bikes here. Yeah, about 40... Over 40% of the population commutes to work by bike.
I did not know that, but honestly, it makes sense, especially in the Curacao Island, where it's hot as all heck all the time.
The where?
Oh, the Dutch island Curacao. I don't know if that's in your route at all, but I guess it's one of the Caribbean islands that's part of the Netherlands, and I have a friend that lived there, grew up there, and he said that the climate is always around 80 degrees, and you can pretty much only survive wearing about shorts and a t-shirt, which is my summer attire here in Maine.
Yes. I don't know about that island, but the climate here is a bit different. I mean, in the summer, it's about the same as Maine, but it's in the winter, it's very rainy and doesn't really get snow, but it's very miserable. The Netherlands, Denmark, Belgium, and some other European countries are like the best known in the world for cycling, that have the most bikes per people.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's awesome. Is that why Europe has such a big, or that's why it's going to be such a long stop on the trip, because of all that? It's accommodating for all that?
I'm grateful for the bicycle infrastructure here, but it's not the main reason for cycling through here. It's because I have some friends I'm going to meet up with along the way. So in like 4 days, I'm meeting up with a German friend in Eindhoven in the Netherlands. And we're going to cycle from there to his town of Dortmund in Germany.
Oh, wow. And then
from there, I'm going to meet one of my friends in Sweden and several others along the way. So it's my route's mainly based off of like what I want to see, like attraction-wise, and if there's friends along the way that I can meet.
People that you've met through your previous cycle tour that you did, or just others that you've met in other places? How do you meet a lot of the people that you're actually meeting up with?
Yeah, so most of the people I'm meeting now, I met on this one trip I took last May of 2018. I went through several countries around the Mediterranean, and like Egypt and Morocco and Spain, Israel, and I met a lot of people on that trip. I was gone for about 8 weeks, so I'm meeting a lot of people from that trip in Europe, and also some that I met on my bike tour in Britain last October.
Now, just to clear, like, a lot of things, you're not doing this for, like, some kind of world record or anything like that. This is, like, a leisure-type thing, and travel, and maybe even a bit of networking and all that.
Exactly, yeah. So I'm not hoping to break the record, because the record for cycling around the world is 80 days.
Wow.
Yeah, that is...
Bro.
80 days? Holy crap.
By Mark Beaumont from Scotland. He did 18,000 miles in 80 days.
Wow.
So I'm not hoping to break that. So the main purpose of this trip is travel and meeting people. I don't actually consider myself a cyclist, because I don't really do it for fun outside of this trip. I just use it as a means of transport, and it's a very economic means of transport, and it's just at the right pace that I can travel at a very nice pace.
although I could possibly see you doing it too, like when you got back, BMX and all that.
Maybe, yeah. I don't see it in my future exactly, but there's always a possibility.
What if you came across this? I don't know if this has happened already, but if you came across a spot in your travels and you're like, maybe I could live here.
Yeah, I'm open to that possibility. Either seeing a place or meeting someone. Like I said before, I'm not really beholden to any time limit, or it's just my trip, and I kind of set up how I want to do it. Like, I know I want to get around the world, but if I find somewhere that I really love, I might spend a certain amount of time there. And I always want to come home eventually and visit, but I never know what's out there for me exactly.
Exactly.
Open road, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty much how.
And I think that's half the fun of traveling, is just not knowing where you're gonna end up.
Yeah, that's most of the best experiences I've had are from just random experiences I've had that I didn't know were coming exactly.
Yeah, I think that's probably the motto for the Pedal the Earth mission. Expect the unexpected. Oh, wait, that's Big Brother. Anyways. Do you have, like, a motto or whatever you're going by? Or any kind of thing like that that you tell yourself? That something like that? When you're doing this?
Well, there's some quotes that are quite cool about travel. Like, just do it. Well, not exactly. Yeah. I can't remember all of them, but there are some inspirational ones, but there's not a single one that I go by, really. There's several good ones.
Well, actually, a bit after I asked that question while you were saying that, I remembered that you said in the interview you did with the local news station in our community that your theme song for the whole thing is Don't Stop Believing.
Yeah. I couldn't think of another song at the time, but it is a good song.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool though.
Yeah, it's a good song to put towards this trip. But mm-hmm. Like when I got done that interview, when I really thought about it, the song that I put towards this is Ocean by John Butler. It's just an instrumental guitar song. It's been my favorite travel song for the past 3 years now.
Oh, nice.
I've always referred to that song when I'm having a hard time or I'm just enjoying myself, actually. It's a really good all around song.
So that's your biking music, essentially.
Yeah, and some podcasts as well.
Ooh, cool.
What's the best, like, music to listen to or podcast to listen to while you're biking?
So I listen to a lot of different music when I'm cycling. I listen to a lot of, like, 70s rock, like CCR, The Beatles, The Doors, Queen, kind of like that. And then for podcasts, I listen to Time Suck by Dan Cummins. And there's another one, the Zero to Travel podcast, The Pursuit Zone, The Travel Stories podcast. Basically just a lot of travel style podcasts and history based podcasts that get my mind going.
Sets the mood. Yeah,
ideas. What was that?
I said it must set the mood for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it gets me, my mind roaming around the world of what's possible.
Something that I've especially always wondered, especially since I knew you were gonna do this, is you're gonna be in some areas where English is not the primary language. Do you know other languages, or how are you gonna get around that?
So I'm pretty conversational in German. I'm learning Spanish, and I'm not gonna be in Spain. I'll only be in Germany for a couple of days, and they speak pretty good English. So I'm back to kind of square one with that. But my routine when I enter a new country, depending on what the English level is I'll learn the basics, like hello, thank you, please, goodbye, how much is this kind of thing, and I'll get really good at those and ask locals how to pronounce the word so I don't sound like a fool. And those will probably usually get me by a little bit, and if I need help I can always resort to the wonderful internet or Google Translate.
Yes, that is definitely so. That's, I bet that's another kind of side project, is has been learning the languages along the way as you plan your route and you see exactly where the, it takes you next. Because you're in the Netherlands right now. Do they speak? Do they try to speak Dutch to you? Do you know Dutch?
So about 90% of the population here is fluent in English. So I'm not worried at all learning Dutch. If someone speaks to me in Dutch, I asked if they know English, and every time so far they've known it. Same goes for like Norway, Sweden, the Scandinavian countries. Most of them are taught English at school. So I research the countries beforehand to know their level of English, and if I can just ask if they know English, which I might do anyway, even if it's a different country. But once you get out of, say, Western Europe, it gets a bit harder and the English level goes down a bit, so I have to learn more of the local language.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about too, especially when you, because didn't you say somewhere that you were going to try to hit China?
Yeah, if I go through Asia, I'll be going through China. That might be proving difficult for the language.
And the jet lag too, Gus. Like, if you, I know you're going to do a little bit more flying.
Well, I won't be flying in China, but when I reach an ocean, I'll have to fly because I don't have paddles on my bike.
Is that possible to get?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
I think that they do have something like that, but I wouldn't trust it on an ocean.
Yeah, I feel like I'd be skeptical of that too.
Yeah, the ocean. Yeah, that's got to be tough. Especially since you have a lot of stuff with you.
Yeah. Like, I considered trying to find sailboats, like, say, from Singapore to Australia, which isn't that far of a distance. It's about 1,000 miles. But there's, now that more modern technology has come around, like planes and cruise ships, there's not many sailboats going to different countries, whereas, say, 30 years ago, even farther away, there might have been more. So really my only option is to really splurge on the cruise ship or to get a cheap flight, which is the flights usually where I'm going.
So you have thought of
it. I would also take the cruise ship too.
Yeah.
Yeah, the cruise ships are just usually a lot of money and not my budget really.
You do have your budget. Is that from a lot of this? Because you had a, I think you did work, you did have a job while you were here in Maine or something, so you just saved up?
Yeah, so I worked at Hannaford, which is a supermarket, for 3 years, and I saved up for 8 months once I came back from Britain, and my budget, I saved up about $10,000, and that's my budget to get to Australia with, and then when I reach Australia, I'm planning on working for 6 months or so to make up more money so I can get home.
Do you know where you're going to work at all, or just going to try to find stuff?
I don't. With Australia and New Zealand, they have these things called working holiday visas, where a lot of citizens from Europe and like the US and Canada can get visas for up to a year or more, actually, to work there. And they can't be permanent jobs, but there's a lot of jobs out there. So I have my friend that I stayed with in England, he worked there for a year and he did all sorts of different jobs. So I'm not too worried about finding one over there, but I don't have one lined up yet.
This is kind of reminding me a little bit of all I can really relate this to with the whole working visa is being an exchange student, but it's an exchange worker.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of cool. That's awesome. I would do that actually.
Yeah, it's just it's a way to travel in the country for much longer, not having to worry about your savings, really.
For sure. More countries need to do that, though, especially the tropical, like the Bahamas and Aruba, all that stuff.
Yeah.
However, I could see
that'd
it being
pretty cool.
I could see it being very useful in the wintertime, because I could just go there, and then it's just summer, and I just picked up right where I left off here in Maine. Summer ends,
exactly.
I go back, and then it's like I never even had to deal with snow.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it'd be nice.
I love this. This is awesome so far. This is why I thought it would be really cool. A part of the reason why I thought it'd be really cool to have you on the podcast is that you could educate a lot of people on a lot of different cultures, and you have a lot of exposure to things that, quite frankly, a lot of people don't.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping to do this trip is really open up the window to other cultures and around the world that people think are, say, dangerous or just they're not really interested in going to those places, which they still might not be, but I want to show them that the world is a much better place than the news and other forms of media put it out to be.
That's right, bro. The media is going to twist it. Oh, not this media. Not this.
Yeah,
not...
this is first-hand accounts.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I like, too. That right there, that's...
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Well, I think that's also what the goal of your book is, too, right? Is to kind of educate people and get your story out there?
Yeah, because that's... I read a couple of the Cyclone Torn books before I did this trip, and those inspired me to look further and do this trip. So I'm hoping when I eventually get around to writing that book after this trip is done, that'll do the same to other people.
I mean, I know I'd buy it.
Thank you.
For sure. Send me the Amazon code when it comes out. I'm gonna get it.
All right. It might be a while.
Oh, in the meantime, I think we'll all be following along with that blog and.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to keep it updated as much as possible. I'm almost done the new one right now, so that'll be going up probably tonight.
Oh, cool. Do you do that on your computer, or how does that work?
I just write it on my website. I log into my website and write it on there, and then I post it from there. Like I said before, if I have notes on my phone, then I'll write down, but I can just refer to those and then delete them afterwards. After I've written it on the website.
That's so cool that you keep old journals. So like the events inspire the journal inspires the blog, and the blog inspires the book. There we go. It's like a full,
there you go. It's a whole circle.
That gives a whole nother that gives a whole new meaning to full cycle.
Yeah.
So I have a question. Like, what advice would you give to anyone who's interested in maybe getting into the world of traveling the world in cycling, or just traveling in general?
I'd say don't be afraid, because the world is a much better place than you probably think it is. People are much kinder when you get to know them. And you don't really need a lot of money to travel. That's what I found
out. Because people think you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it depends what kind of traveling you're doing. If you're doing vacations, of course that will be costly. But if you want to focus more on the traveling and getting to see other cultures and places, then you can do it on a really nice, tight budget, and you can still enjoy it.
Oh, that's amazing. Really is.
So basically anyone can do this. If you just save up a little bit of money each week, you can, no matter what, I'm not going to say no matter what your situation, because I don't know everyone's situation, but I think everyone could afford to do a little bit of money each week if they really want to travel. It's basically what your goals are.
Determination.
How bad you want it. Yeah, determination.
Because I know, like, I've always wanted to travel and
see
the world, but everyone's like, oh, you need money for it.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you don't.
So if you just put a little bit away each week, soon enough, that'll build up. Might be a little time, might be a long time, but eventually you get to do that trip you want.
is the bike the easiest way to do it too, or how have you seen other people do it?
Well, it's definitely the cheapest way I've seen to do it, because you're providing your own transport, you're providing your own accommodation for the most part with a tent, and the food is usually very cheap because you can cook your own food. There are other ways, like people do walking or hiking trips around, and they can also live very cheaply. But basically, any way that you can provide your own transportation is quite a good way to travel and very budget friendly.
Yeah, because you could save on gas too. You don't have to fuel up. It's no hey, I gotta fuel up the bike.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. My only fuel is the food.
Peanut butter, you said, right?
Yeah, it's mostly peanut butter.
Do you eat well at the bed and breakfast and with your hosts? And I know you stayed at a few hotels and stuff.
Yeah, so it depends where I am. Like, when I stayed with my friends in England, I obviously ate very well, because they're in a house and they have regular food. But when I'm on the road, I usually try to eat well. Like, I get pasta and I can cook that for dinner, and for during the day I usually get fruit and bread to eat. But once in a while, maybe once a week or once every 2 weeks, I have to get a really good meal in there, like with lots of vegetables and proteins.
Oh yes.
So I just have to make sure I'm keeping my nutrition up during this trip.
Yeah.
Oh, that's, I'm sure that's the key of it too.
Yeah, you have to keep going somehow.
Because I feel like it'd be really easy to just forget about the essentials.
Yeah, I did that when I cycled Britain, and I definitely felt it. I was just really eating energy bars and candy a lot. And I just wanted the energy and not the nutrition.
The stuff that's good, but not good for you.
Yep. Yeah, it only provides a little bit of energy, and then you crash, and not crash literally, but you crash. Yeah, so you need long-term nutrition, not short-term.
Are you anxious to try different foods from other countries that you haven't even set foot or tire in yet?
There's some. The food's actually not a big part of the traveling for me, because usually it can be quite expensive to get like local dishes. So I just try to eat what I know. It also saves my health, because if you eat a lot of foreign foods, it might not be good for your stomach and what comes after that. I've had that experience in Egypt that wasn't good.
Oh, dang, yeah.
Yeah, so you just have to know when to try the local dishes and when not to.
But you have a lot of... I know you utilize the grocery stores and stuff too. Did you take a lot of stuff from home that will hopefully won't go bad a lot? Or?
So when I left, I was carrying a lot of food. My family just loaded me up with everything. They just took me to the supermarket before I left and just told me what to get, what I wanted. That lasted me to about Canada, because I didn't want to carry like a god awful amount of food, because that would just weigh me down. So that lasted about 5 or 6 days. And then I started having to get my own food, which is what I have to do, obviously. So I had to decide what was important for the energy to the dollar value, kind of. So peanut butter so far is probably the best, along with like bananas, bread, cans of fruit, and also peaches and apples and stuff like that.
Oh, I can just imagine when you get to the tropics and you see like ripe tropical fruit, and you're just like,
I'm looking forward to getting like mangoes, lots of mangoes.
Yes.
If I go through Africa, they say the mangoes are very juicy.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, so those look good.
Sometimes you tell me about these things or you blog about them, and I just wish I was there. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I get that experience too, reading about other books. Sometimes someone can describe something so well that it just makes you want it that badly.
Exactly, yeah.
That's what you do, bro.
Yeah.
I try. You're gonna be in the Netherlands for 2 days, you said?
I'll be here till probably mid-Saturday. I think Saturday I'll probably cross into Germany with my friend that I'm cycling with.
Oh,
so is this a solo cycling trip or a group effort?
Yeah, so it's solo. So far, this is the only friend that's gonna join me for a couple days. I didn't know anybody from home or abroad that wants to join me for the entire trip. I wouldn't blame them. It's a very long trip. So there's not many other people that want to do this. So
Ashley, we should join him.
Right? That's how I'm like. We'll join you.
Yes. Yeah. Without a doubt and without a question, we'll do it. We'll be right there.
Yeah.
Rather,
I will warn you. It's a lot of cycling.
I bet.
I mean, let's do this, bro.
You could just get like a huge tandem bike and, you know.
Yeah, like a 3-person tandem bike.
Do they make those?
Probably.
Yeah, they probably do.
Oh, man. But then don't you have like a tent and stuff too?
Yeah, I only have one-person tent, so that might not work out.
Yeah. We'll need a couple of them, which I can probably invest. My dad's into camping stuff. So. Which, were you even before this? Did you see yourself as the type that would camp out and, you know, off the grid and all that?
No, I'm still having a hard time getting used to that. I've only camped like 4 or 5 nights on this trip. It's very hard to get into the mindset of needing to find a place to camp, but not really being able to pay for it, like a campground, so you need to find a place to camp wild. And it's, when you first start it out, it's very hard to do, but I've heard that once you get into it, it gets much easier. I've only wild camped once, and it turned out okay, but I haven't since.
And how do you gauge what's the best place to be in? That way you know, you know, nothing or nobody would try to find you, and then it would just be a disaster.
Well, what's basically the strategy? If you find like a wooded place on the side of the road, I haven't done this because the only place I wild camped was right off a parking lot near some water. But if you find like a secluded place, you wait for all the cars to pass and then walk into the woods, try to find a nice place, and so no one really sees you. Because the best way is to either camp right with everyone so they can see you, or away from everyone so they don't see you.
Yeah, just so that they have an awareness, like, okay, you know, somebody has a camp set up here, and, you know, any of that.
Yeah, I haven't had any bad experiences so far, but I've heard of some where people are curious and they go unzip your tent or whatnot, and I've heard that can be scary.
Oh yeah, that sounds scary.
Like it. Do you have like an air mattress in your tent, or do you have to use the, like, almost, I don't want to say hard ground, but yeah, that's almost what it is.
I've got this foam pad, it's a Therm-a-Rest sleeping mat that folds up, and I bungee that to the back rack of my bike.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's not that bad.
I'd been thinking about that too. And you have a camping stove and all that, so you can use?
Yeah, I started off with a gas stove, which I left behind in Canada because, one, I couldn't take it on a plane with me, and two, after cooking with it several times, I just didn't like the smell of the very bad smell of gas that came out every time you lit it up and started cooking with it. So I actually bought this hobo stove, they call them. It's just these metal plates that you interlock together, and it has a hole in the middle where you put twigs and whatnot, and you can, it's basically just a little campfire that you can cook your food with.
Wow! Can you use it like a grill, or is it kind of...
You maybe could, but I haven't tried it. It's like you can, it's got these like a grid on top, so you can put your pot on it without it falling through, but yeah.
Sounds like they make these things really well, though. Have you used that yet?
I haven't used it yet, because I ordered it when I was in England, and I stayed in my friend room for a while, and since then, I've just been lucky to, been lucky to get other foods, plus been unlucky that I haven't found a really place to start that fire, but I will when I get to more rural places, which are coming along on this trip.
What's the bed and breakfast like? Is it more like a hotel setting, or is it more like just staying with a few people in their house as if you know them?
Kind of in between. Like, I have my own room, but it is usually like a shared bathroom, and it's not as official as a hotel, really. So the one I'm in right now, I've got this small room and a bathroom right outside that's shared, but I'm the only one in this bed and breakfast right now.
Is it a big house?
Yeah, it's a house.
Like a big one?
But regular size, not too big. But like the whole upstairs is dedicated to guests, and then downstairs is probably their living quarters.
Is the host nice? Like, do they ever let you just hang with them and you can just casually talk to them, or do they keep their distance since you're like a customer? How does it work? I've never stayed in one, so I don't really know.
Well, it depends from which different bed and breakfasts I go to, but it's normally like you talk to them when you first get here and they get to know you, and especially about my trip, I tell them about my trip, and then like you get breakfast in the morning, talk to them a bit more, but usually you stay to yourself.
Is that how it has to be, or does that depend on the host and the customer, or?
Well, it's not how it has to be. It depends on the host, really, how talkative they are and if they want to hang out or not. I've done couch surfing in the past where it's basically free accommodation. Someone hosts you for free, and with that, I feel like we talk a lot more because it's mainly about the traveling, and you want to talk about travel and get to know the other person, whereas the bed and breakfast, you're paying for it, so there's not as much of an interest as to get to know the other person.
I don't know if like this is the same for flying, but like, have you considered looking at Airbnbs?
Yeah, I've stayed in many Airbnbs traveling in the past and on this trip, and they're usually quite nice. I've had different ones where some I have the entire place to myself, some I just have a little room. It depends by the place.
Fascinating. That's wow. So the couch surfing thing you said is that's free?
Yes.
I guess I thought that was like kind of like an B&B, but not exactly. Interesting. So I take it you're going to be doing that a lot then. Is that true?
I'm going to try to, because I'm going to keep my costs down. But couch surfing, you go on there, look for a place you want to go to, or a place you're going, and request to stay with someone, and they let you know whether or not they can host you. It's kind of asking a favor rather than like, yes, I'm going to stay with you. So it's not a definite whenever you want couch surf. So it's you kind of have to play it by ear with that, because I've had instances where I need a place to stay for the night, and then my host quits on me in the last minute, and I need to find a different place to stay at like very late in the night. So
that sucks.
You just have to be careful.
Yeah. I can't imagine. And is it there? I guess it's this kind of app. I almost imagine it a little bit like Uber in a sense. You see who's there, and you see who's around for hosts and all that, and you just kind of...
Yeah,
Uber for
you
sleep.
Search by what place you're going to, and it shows you what people are in that area. So it's an app and it's a website.
Ah, I didn't know there was an app for couch surfing.
Yeah, it's good. I recommend it.
Interesting.
Well, the app and the couch surfing in general.
And there's a lot of people that do it, that do open up their homes for it and all that?
Yeah, it's become a very big thing in the past decade at least. I've coach surfed twice, once in Italy and once in Canada, and they've both been amazing experiences. So I'm hoping the future ones are also like that.
do you literally have to stay on their couch, or do they open up a bedroom?
Or is it it depends on the house, but it's the two times I've stayed, it's been a bedroom. Because some people have spare bedrooms, some people just have the couch.
Oh, for sure. I take it, too, that people have to go through background checks before they can start doing it, just to make sure they're at least good people, after all these people are staying in their homes.
No, you don't. There's not really? A necessary background check, but what there is the references, so it's hard to get into it when you first start couchsurfing, because you have no references, but then, now that I have two references, I'm more likely to get hosted, because people have wrote recommendations on my profile, so they can see how I am as a hostie, and how people found me.
Do the hosts themselves have references? That way they can see, like, oh, this is what it's like at this house versus this one.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so each, I could host if I wanted to as well. You have to put on your profile if you're available to host or not, which I'm not, because I'm traveling, but the people that are available to host, they also have recommendations from other people that they've hosted, so you can see how they are as people and hosts as well.
And I'm sure they left good, you know, I'm sure they left awesome reviews on you. Did they mention the trip at all, just in case the other hosts might see the name and then be like, oh, cool?
Yeah, so the one in Italy, that was almost 2 years ago now, so I wasn't on the cycle tour then, but the one in Canada, I was on the cycle tour, and they mentioned that I'm on a trip around the world. And on my profile, I've also wrote that I'm traveling by bicycle. I prefer not to go into cars or whatnot. I've got my website on there if people want more info.
Does it seem weird being in a car after traveling by bike all this time? Like, whenever you do go in cars? Because I think you went in some when you were in England, didn't you? When you were with people. I'm just referring back to the blog here.
Yeah, it hasn't been that long since I've been in car, because when I was in England, I was in a car almost every other day with my friends going to other towns or going to the supermarket. So I'm not opposed to going into cars like some cycle tourists are. I just hope it doesn't interfere with my route at all.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Has anyone offered to, have they ever pulled on the side of the road, maybe rolled down their windows? They were like, hey, you need a lift or whatever? And then you were either like, yes or no.
Hasn't happened on this trip so far. It did happen when I was just cycling around town in America, which I just said no, because I was doing it for fun.
When you do end up back in Maine, how are you gonna do things with America? Are you gonna cycle through Canada and then just cut back into Maine, or are you gonna go down the U.S. to visit the States?
So I haven't decided yet if I'm going to go up through South America or just fly into North America from Australia. But from either point that I fly into, I'll just cycle. Say if I cycle into California or Canada, I'll cycle across the United States back home. And if I fly into South America, I'll cycle up back home.
Nice. Did you say you were gonna possibly fly into California? Wow. You know,
I don't know yet.
You know you know who lives there, right?
Who?
Our co-host.
People. I live there.
Oh, okay.
Our co-host.
In Northern Cali.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So when you said that, I'm just like, whoa! Hey, I know somebody.
Yeah, it's just, I'm looking at South America right now because it looks very interesting. To fly into the southern tip of South America and cycle home. But it's a long way away and I haven't planned that far ahead.
Yeah.
You know what else we'll see in Central America? Beaches.
Lots of those, yeah.
Like, you could possibly, it could be the middle of December. Well, I don't know. You'll probably be in Australia by then, maybe, you think? When are you going to be there?
I'm not sure yet.
Well, either
way. It depends on which continent I go through.
Even if you were in Australia, it's summer there in winter, so you could go to the beach on Christmas, bro. How awesome is that, guys?
It'd feel weird because there's no snow. But granted, this Christmas, I might be in the Middle East where there's no snow. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I wonder if they'll have beaches too.
Well, they do in Israel. But I've been to the beaches in Israel.
Whoa. Christmas on the beach. That's a concept that I just love. Doesn't it just... Oh my gosh, this is awesome. This is amazing. And I bet even this... So like I said, just even if it is winter when you happen to be in South America, you're just like, you know, kicking back in the sun and I'm having a snow day. It's like, whoa, opposites. That gives a whole new meaning to polar opposites.
Well, in the southern hemisphere of South America, it's the opposite, same as Australia. So our the winter in America is the summer over there, and likewise. So I'd have to wait until I'm like past Ecuador into Colombia before Christmas starts getting like it is in America.
What about biking in the snow? Do you have plans for that, or?
So there's a possibility I'll be in Turkey during the winter if there's snow. I haven't looked too far ahead, but I'm guessing I'll be all right because it's not as bad as it is in America, in Maine especially. It's brutal in Maine.
Yes, it most definitely is.
Like if I was planning to go through the U.S. in winter, I would skip Maine in the surrounding area. But Turkey, it's not as severe. So we'll see when I come to it.
Humor me for a sec. Turkey's in Europe, correct?
Part of it's in Europe, but when you get to Istanbul, there's the Bosphorus separates Istanbul, and then you take a bridge over that. I think it's a river, the Bosphorus Strait. And once you cross that strait, you're into Asia. So there's a little bit of Turkey in Europe, and then the rest is in Asia.
Okay. Geographically. So it's a little bit like Russia then.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Are you gonna bike there at all, or?
There's a possibility if I go through Asia, I'd have to go into Siberia to go through China.
Oh wow!
It'd be in summer, so I wouldn't have to worry about the snow.
Why does part of me think that maybe I don't know if this is at your parents' house or somewhere, but why does part of me think that there's somebody out there with a map, and they dart it with every place that you've been? No, it isn't me, because I just thought of the idea, but I feel like it's somewhere out there.
Maybe. I have a map at home that I scratch out which countries I've been to, so when I get back, there'll be a lot more to do.
Oh, yeah. So you already have a map that you've marked up.
Yeah, it's on my bedroom at home.
Nice.
Yeah. I can probably draw my route on in there as well.
I can't imagine. That'd be... Because I was thinking that too. Do you use Google Maps or a lot of things like that to see where you gotta go?
So, when I'm on Wi-Fi, I use Google Maps. And when I'm on the road with no Wi-Fi, I use this app called Guru Maps, which allows you to download maps by country.
Oh, that's cool.
I've never heard of that one. Maps. Interesting.
Yeah, it's quite cool.
What was it? Tell me a bit about the day and the moments that you left. What was it like? Were you nervous? Were you excited? Were you mixed emotions? How was it? Like, I read the blog and everything, but there's only so much you can read about it. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, there's a bit of everything going on in my head. Because all my family was there, all the people I knew that I'd be leaving for maybe 2 years or more. And I had to say goodbye to them or see you later. And it was hard, but I tried not to think about it in the moment because I wanted to enjoy that day and not be sad. So I tried to be optimistic and I went down the line and hugged everyone. And then, they lined up on each side of my driveway, and I cycled past them and started the trip.
Oh, wow. And didn't, I think you met up with some family the next day?
So that's the person I mentioned that asked if I wanted the police to camp. Or you asked him about the, I met up my mom and dad and sister the next day.
Oh, yeah, that, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, so I cycled to Bangor, and then in the next 2 days, and I met them there, and my mom, dad, sister, and our dogs spent one last day together because we wanted to have a day separate from everyone else because we're the closest family.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah, it was nice, and we spent a day walking around and seeing some sights, and then we said goodbye, and they were going to come visit me in December, wherever I am then.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's awesome. For Christmas?
Yeah. A little bit before Christmas. Like mid-December.
Yeah, I'm sure you guys will get in whatever festivities you have.
Yeah, probably.
While they're there.
Yeah.
You said that might be the Middle Eastern area?
Yeah, Turkey or Jordan. Maybe Israel.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I kind of think that we've covered most everything for today, but I will say that I am pretty sure that this is not the last we'll be hearing from Max Turcotte, as when I first pitched the idea to him, he mentioned about coming on and giving regular updates about the journey. Are you still in for that, bro?
Yeah, what was that?
About coming on here regularly, because I'm kind of bringing this episode here to a close.
So I think it would be pretty cool to, at the end of every continent, I can give like some updates of what's happened.
Ooh.
So, like when I reach the end of Europe, we can do one. Yeah, that'd be cool.
I like that idea. I really do. That's awesome. And now, when cool. I like this. Keep an eye out here on this podcast, Something Lit with DJ Hunter. And every time Max Turcotte hits the end of a continent, we get to have a discussion.
Sounds good.
Awesome. Now, if you want to follow along, if you are the literary type, you can go to pedaltheearth.com. That's pedaltheearth.com. I got a link in the description in the show notes. And you can definitely go there. Is there anything that either of you guys want to say before I hit the magic button?
It's been fun.
Yeah, just thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to next time we talk.
Oh, for sure.
Good luck on your travels. I hope you get everything out of it.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, indeed. And we'll, you know, she and I will probably definitely be following with this. And Max, you're awesome. You're my bro now.
Thanks, Hunter.
It was good meeting you, Max.
Yeah, you too, Ashley.
And remember, Thanks. And remember that those who dare to fail greatly can achieve greatly. I'm DJ Hunter. I'll see you guys in the next episode. But until then, peace.